Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to Energy Security Cubed. I'm your host, CEO, and President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, Kelly Ogle. On today's episode, recorded December 10, we look at nuclear energy in Canada and more specifically what small nuclear reactors could mean for Canadian energy security. With us today from Ottawa is John Gorman. John is the President and CEO of the Canadian Nuclear Association. The Canadian Nuclear Association is the primary voice for the nuclear industry in Canada. It strives to make Canadians aware of the value of nuclear energy on both a national and international scale. Welcome, John. We're happy to have you.
Thank you very much, Kelly. I'm delighted to be here, sitting down with you, albeit virtually.
Yes, I think we've met, John. I've been in your office a couple of times when I was campaigning in Ottawa for CGAI, and John Stewart and John Barrett are fellows of the Institute, and we have a long history with the CNA. And I guess to start, John, could you give us a bit of a kind of nuclear energy 101 for the listeners to give a little bit of an understanding of the Canadian Nuclear Association and the status of nuclear power and its transmission and distribution in Canada?
Sure. I think a lot of your listeners would be surprised to know just what a long, rich history Canada has in the creation of nuclear power and the whole ecosystem that we have in place here, from our nuclear laboratories to our expertise in nuclear medicine to the other sectors that support nuclear, like uranium mining, for example. But let me try to give a little bit of an overview here. Firstly, we've been operating Canadian technology and nuclear plants in Canada here for over 60 years. And notably, nuclear powers about two-thirds of all of Ontario's electricity demand and about a third of New Brunswick's electricity demand. So by a national measure, we're at about 15% of our electricity in Canada comes from nuclear power. Now, we've been able to do some pretty amazing things with our CANDU technology. Firstly, aside from how much electricity it produces, it also employs a lot of people, right? There's about 76,000 people working in the nuclear industry. We are pulling off the country's largest infrastructure project right now. It's the refurbishment of a number of the nuclear units in Ontario, about a $26 billion project. And it's by virtue of this large infrastructure project, which is proceeding on time and on budget, that we are doing some really interesting and important things in innovation, both around nuclear medicine and also around small modular reactors. So happy to talk about any of those things. But I guess the important things to know, Kelly, are a very prominent source of electricity in Canada, the second largest one, emissions-free, clean electricity. And Canada is, by virtue of its performance over these last 60 years, a tier one nuclear nation in the world. And we have a lot to be proud of.
Yes, John, I was fortunate enough to be to tour the Ontario Power Corporation's facility at Pickering about a year ago. And I was astounded at the level of, we want to get into the security discussion a bit here too, as we proceed through this podcast, but I was just astounded at what goes on there. And, and the refurbishment of Unit 4, I believe, was going on when I was there. I don't know if they call it Unit 4, but yes, the magnanimity of it is understated. People, I don't think people quite understand that.
Can I tell you a little story there? Just because I had the same kind of experience. So it's kind of important to know that while I have a long background in electricity and energy, you know, over 20 years, really my background is in renewables. And specifically in solar. So I've spent a long time in the solar industry, and you know, it's an important technology, clean technology that's very useful now. But to produce electricity from solar takes a lot of space, right? Fields and fields of panels. And so when I joined the nuclear industry about just over a year ago, I was really coming up to speed on the technology. And just like you, I went to one of these plants, but in this case, it was over at the Bruce Power Facility And they bring you through a tour of the nuclear plant, which is really impressive in itself. But it ends the tour and you're looking over these four gen sets, you know, these steam turbines. So you're sort of on a platform and you're looking over these massive turbines that are, you know, sort of sitting on a space that's maybe the size of a football field or something like that, right? Which sounds big, but really, you know, in energy terms is not that big. And the chief nuclear officer pulls out his iPhone. He looks at the amount of production that's coming from these, just this nuclear plant. And he leans over and he tells me that 30% of the electricity that was being consumed in Ontario at that moment was coming from this particular plant. It's just sort of mind-blowing to think about the energy density that is coming off of these plants in a very small, compact area. So yeah, really stunning.
I had the same experience. I'm standing looking out the window at Pickering and seeing the transmission lines going away from there, carrying, I think it was 26% of the power generated in Ontario at that time. It is. And that, I think that leads into the bulk of what we want to talk about, John, is, you know, unfortunately, I think given the current, the where we are in the world today, to build a plant of that capacity today would be impossible. The environmental concerns, the amount of permitting, the regulatory issues, and the actual technology, it hasn't gone by the wayside. I think the build-outs of these, rebuilds of these plants is going to be give them 40 or more years life. Is that about correct?
That's right.
But the future, I think, is in smaller modular reactors. And could you kind of bring us up to speed on where Canada is in the SMR, which is the moniker for small modular reactors, where we are in Canada in that space today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to do that, Kelly. So just before we get into the small modular reactors, though, I do want to point out that there are these very large conventional plants that are being continue to be built around the world, right? We see them in various countries and in particular in places like China and India. But, you know, our CANDU technology has been exported to seven different countries, and there are ongoing projects now, new builds and as well as refurbishments that are involving CANDU in places like Romania and other places. So that's still a very active part of the business. And some of the larger CANDU plants also have a real big future in places like Africa and things. So I just wanted to point that out.
But let's stay there, John, because I think that one of the things that people, you know, that the fearmongers run up the flagpole is the security and safety. And I think that people don't understand how the uranium itself and the fact that and the process of the CANDU reactor is the safety factors. And that leads to discussions about security. So maybe expand a little bit on the CANDU, if you could.
Sure. Well, you know, the CANDU reactors use natural uranium, which is not enriched. In Saskatchewan, we have a very significant uranium sector, which produces enough uranium to be the second largest provider of uranium in the world. So we have this amazing resource, and we use that uranium from Saskatchewan to power our CANDU reactors in Canada and in New Brunswick. So we've been able to export that technology into countries using our expertise, and those plants continue to operate very well and very safely. Here in the Canadian context, no one has ever been harmed or injured by the spent fuel that's come out of our reactors, and we have a stellar operating and safety record here that is overseen by the Canadian Nuclear and Safety Commission, which is a really well-regarded regulator. So world recognition, Kelly, in terms of the technology that we have coming out of our country and our reputation as a world leader and operator.
Great. Okay, John, let's move to SMRs and please bring us up to date on the current technology and what's going on in Canada, and then we'll talk about the security aspects of that as we proceed.
Okay, so let's start with what are small modular reactors. So small modular reactors are, as the name would imply, smaller units that are produced in factories. So either entirely produced in factories and manufactured in factories, or the components are produced in these manufacturing plants and they're shipped to site. They're sort of, you could think of it notionally as a personal computer. These SMRs are sort of personal computers compared to the mainframe computers that are the conventional plants. So very distributable. They can vary in size from as small as 2 megawatts, which would be enough to provide electricity and heat, clean electricity and heat to a small community, up to 300 megawatts, which sounds big, but is still
300 megawatts.
Yeah, up to 300 megawatts, which sounds big, but is still much smaller than, you know, the conventional plants, which are usually about 1,000 megawatts or a gigawatt. And if you got up to the 300 megawatt size, you'd be connecting them to the electricity grid and you'd be able to power a small city, for example. So there are a number of different technologies ranging in between those sizes, but the main attributes of them are that they're smaller, they can be financed by the private sector, they can be scaled to meet whatever the need is of a particular industry or a community. And they're very responsive. And the reason I bring this up, Kelly, is because, you know, as we look to decarbonizing our energy systems, we have to bring in clean electricity that is going to be able to be partnered with other forms, other clean technologies. And, you know, right now in the world, we see that wind and solar continue to be paired with coal-fired electricity generation and gas-fired electricity generation. And that means that we haven't really made all that much progress in terms of decarbonizing the world's electricity systems. Because when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, you've got these fossil fuels kicking in to back them up. And as a result, you know, 20 years ago, when I started in the renewables field, we had 36% non-emitting electricity on the world's electricity grids. And today, 20 years later, after the massive rollout of wind and solar, we're still stuck at 36% non-emitting electricity on the world's grids. So these small modular reactors are really able to work well with these intermittent sources of electricity. They can form a new partnership there, which I think will allow the world and Canada, of course, to make a real dent in the electricity systems, which I think is really important.
Well, I think, oftentimes I believe that the average person does not understand the necessity of baseload power. Wind and solar are certainly part of the future. And as battery technologies change and become more efficient and longer lived, that those things can provide lots of power, especially in micro grid situations. But I think that this is very important. And I guess, so let's go down that path of how SMRs can provide baseload situational power for, let's pick, like, give us an indicator or an example of where that could be employed in Canada. You know, and sorry, in Alberta, for instance, with the amount of, like, we got infinite amount of natural gas, and the way we're situated, the baseload will be natural gas until further notice. So where, let's talk about the North maybe, John.
Well, this is a really important question, Kelly. And the promise of these small modular reactors really is that they can be a great enabler of other clean energy sources, but also a bridge between electricity and fuel, which is really important here. So, you know, there's this role that small modular reactors can play in Alberta or Saskatchewan or other places that still have gas and coal on their electricity grid to replace that. And that's important, as you say. But there's also this other reality that Canada is a natural resource-driven economy, right? Heavily so. And while I spend a lot of time talking about electricity, the fact is that electricity only meets 20% of our energy needs. And when you look at the bigger energy picture, 80% of those energy needs are currently met by fossil fuels. And this is where small modular reactors, which produce really high temperature, clean, consistent heat, are able to bridge the difference between electricity and fossil fuels. So for example, you mentioned Alberta. You know, our extraction industries require really high temperature steam, which is currently produced by gas-fired electricity. If you could produce that steam instead using a small modular reactor, which you can do and which we will do, you're going to decarbonize the way that we're producing that product from that extraction industry. And what that means is that Canada is producing an even more competitive product, both from a cost and a carbon per barrel point of view. The mining industry is really clamoring for small modular reactors to use in their operations, because the small modular reactors create the heat that they need, as well as the electricity. They'll be able to produce hydrogen from these units using the heat or the electricity, and they can use the heat and the electricity to power their off-grid operations. And because small modular reactors can actually be transported, this gives a lot of flexibility to places that actually need to move that power and heat source around. So, you know, Kelly, even the initial studies that we've done with the mining sector show that the first SMRs coming off of the manufacturing line are going to be able to save those companies 50% of their energy costs, and at the same time be decarbonizing their...
Well, yeah, reducing the GHG, it's exponentially effective. There's no question. And, you know, in our last podcast, we were talking with a fellow from New York about crude oil demand over the future. And, you know, Canada's 5 million barrels a day of production needs to be part of the 100 million barrels a day that's going to be used here for the next couple decades. That's you can almost prove that unequivocally. So here we are with the ability with a small nuclear reactor to reduce that GHG of that barrel by a lot. So I guess, John, in my own understanding of the business, a lot of the friction associated with getting to the market is regulatory. Could you speak a little bit about how, for instance, the small modular reactor can get through the Atomic Energy Commissions, et cetera, in Canada relative to the past where, you know, permitting is a long-term process. And this is something that I think that the viewer needs to understand, is that the SMR should be able to advance that fairly quickly. Is that not true?
That is true. I'd say it's a competitive advantage for Canada when it comes to being a first mover with these small modular reactors. So we have the regulator that you mentioned, Kelly, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, that's been active now for over 60 years in terms of regulating the industry, and has an incredible reputation worldwide, not only for the sort of safe, efficient operation of our industry, but also because they are they're very progressive in terms of how they look at new technologies. So they look at each new technology and they're able to deal with the sort of new aspects of that technology, rather than being prescriptive and trying to say, you know, you have to fit into this box. And as a result, we have 12 different technologies that are going through the review and licensing process right now. Some of them in very late stages and almost ready to be licensed. Some of those are Canadian technologies. Some of those are international technologies from companies who recognize that Canada has a market for small modular reactors, but also a really effective regulator who's going to be able to get these things out in a timely fashion. And the last thing I'd say, Kelly, is that the federal government has had some foresight here, because they've allowed the regulator to have jurisdiction over new small modular reactors that are up to 60 megawatts, so big enough for, you know, mining operations or you know, First Nations communities, large ones if they needed it, so that we will be able to go through that assessment process in a very effective manner. And that's actually become a competitive advantage for us.
So when do you think, I don't want to put you under the gun, but I'm going to do it anyways. What's the timing, John, on when's the first SMR going to be operational in Canada?
So Ontario Power Generation, about 3 weeks ago now, announced that they intend to have their first small modular reactor connected in 2028. That one is going to be on the existing Darlington nuclear site, which already has a license to go ahead and put another nuclear facility on that site.
So a brownfield, so to speak.
And one that is licensed. But the significance of that is that Ontario Power Generation will actually be leading the way in terms of going through all of the first of a kind experiences that you flagged, Kelly. So around regulatory and licensing requirements and build out and things like that. But the plan by four utilities, which include OPG, Bruce Power, New Brunswick Power, and Sask Power, is a very comprehensive plan that sees a rollout of multiple units. So the next one will be built in Saskatchewan, and it will follow very closely on the footsteps of OPG leading the way on that particular one.
So in Saskatchewan, it would be used to replace coal then?
That's right. Yeah, that's right, because we need to... We're mandated to, as a nation, to phase out our coal by 2030, and it's their plan to bring in small modular reactors, as well as some hydro from Manitoba, and create more opportunities to bring on wind and solar because they've included a small modular reactor on their grid.
Well, I'm from Southwest Saskatchewan originally, and I understand wind. It's there's a lot of wind. We have a big wind capacity. So, okay. John, let's talk about a bit before, as we finish up here, about security. And you know, I think that, give us a sense of where Canada's nuclear power generation fits in the whole globe. Like internationally, where would we fit as a nation in nuclear power and the future of it?
So this is going to be a good discussion, Kelly. I'll probably, you know, be able to learn quite a bit from you on this particular issue. I will tell you that, you know, Canada has largely looked at nuclear, not from a geopolitical point of view or security point of view, but from through a climate lens. You know, what can this do to help us decarbonize? And I guess they've looked at it through an economic lens as well. You know, can we use our expertise here to export our nuclear products and services and help other countries decarbonize and create jobs at the same time. But this has shifted lately because of the United States, which, you know, primarily, especially under the Trump administration, viewed nuclear as a geopolitical and security, energy security related issue. And with the, you know, with the development of these small modular reactors, there's been a lot of collaboration and coordination going on between the United States and Canada in terms of how we can work together to deliver these small modular reactors to other nations. And because of that, Canada has had to really recognize what some of the global security issues around energy really are all about. So when I mentioned Romania, for example, earlier on as a place where we're likely putting a new CANDU reactor in place and refurbishing a couple of CANDU reactors they have there. This has been a real partnership between Canada and the United States is forming. And of course, it is being led from a geopolitical perspective from the Americans, who want to ensure that whatever goes into Romania is a North American technology and supported by the United States and hopefully Canada. And, you know, that's another way of saying that they're very sensitive to the idea that Romania would turn to China or to Russia for technology for new build there.
This is that fascinating discussion, John. And that's, you know, that's the crux of the matter with CGAI. We try to look at everything through a security lens, the climate lens. That's interesting. And I think it's very important. But, you know, I think that there's a new realism as the liberal international order has changed and has been redefined here in the past, you know, especially under the Trump administration. And then, don't get me wrong, Obama took an insular view too of security. And I think that this discussion has led me to believe that, you know, I think we need to revisit this, John, in a few months. We're going to have various experts across the next few podcasts about nuclear power and or security. And I thank you very much for this, John. I think we'd like to revisit with you in a year and see where we are with what's transpired to that point. And I thank you very much for participating.
Thank you, Kelly. And would you mind if I just add one last point to your question?
Carry on. We've got all morning here, John.
Okay, because I have been given It's been nice to have the opportunity to think a bit about, you know, global security and energy security generally. But the other thing that occurred to me is, you know, Canada, because of its long history in nuclear energy, and because of the fact that we have the full spectrum of the nuclear ecosystem here.
Yeah, full cycle. We have the uranium, and we produce power, and we sell it, export.
We've got everything we need to be self-sufficient on the nuclear power front, right? And to give you an example of how important that is, when we phased out coal in Ontario, which is the world's largest, still the world's largest single decarbonization initiative, we replaced 90% of our coal with additional nuclear capacity over a period of a very small number of years. And so it just speaks to, you know, the importance of being able to deliver that kind of thing internally. And I think that does factor into the energy security question.
I think people really need to understand that the ability of nuclear to affect the globe is exponential. It's not just quantums, it's exponential. And I think that I'd like to, you know, I'll leave it there. People, this has been great. I hope we've made people more aware of the situation and the future for nuclear power in Canada. One more question, John. What are you reading these days?
Do you pin everybody with this? Here, let me.
We do. I should have given you a fair warning, but
oh, that's okay. So I've got a couple books on the go. One of them is called Out of the Wreckage, A New Politics in the Age of Crisis, I think is the title. Anyways, by a British author named Monbiot, and it's essentially about how current political ideologies, he believes, misrepresent what humans are all about. He thinks humans are fundamentally altruistic and they're cooperators, but we're being forced into this very sort of individualistic thing. But that's not why I'm reading it. The reason I'm reading it is because the author, Monbiot, also talks about the importance of story in defining who we are. And when I look at the challenge that we have with all of the misinformation and stigma around nuclear, it's kind of all caught up in this story that people have in their heads about what nuclear is. And this author talks about how we have to replace those stories with new stories. And so I think it's a real relevance to what we're doing with the nuclear industry now, trying to get people to look at the real facts behind nuclear, because it's just such an important solution to the crisis we're facing.
I love that, John. I think it speaks well to the Canadian psyche, and the fact that, you know, it's all about stories, right? Like, and we all have one, and everyone's story is important. Thanks so much for joining us, John.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to this episode of Energy Security Cubed on the Canadian Global Affairs Podcast Network. You can find the CGI Network on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you like the show, give us a rating. You can also find Canadian Global Affairs Institute on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you like this episode and want to help us keep creating content, you can support us by donating at cgai.ca/support. The Energy Security Cubed is brought to you by our team at CGAI. Thanks go out to our producers, Seth Scott and Charlotte Duvall-Landlon, and to Drew Phillips for providing our music. I'm Kelly Ogle, and thanks for joining us on Energy Security Cubed.